Hello, welcome to Microsoft Virtual Academy series ITIL for IT professionals. My name is Nathan Lesnowski. I'm Director of Infrastructure and Architecture at Concurrency. And today we're going to be talking about service transition. This is going to be focused toward an IT professional community. And we're focused on making this real in a way that impacts your daily life. So what is service transition? What is this all about? Service transition is about taking the strategy that we've defined, then we've designed, and then launching it. It's like taking the rocket that you've built for the last 6 months, and you've organized mission control around, and you've gotten the astronauts ready, and you said, okay, now we want to go to the moon. We've always dreamed about going to the moon. It's a strategy that we've set before us. We've defined how we're going to get there. We've built the thing that's going to allow us to get there. We've articulated why the costs are important. We've even assigned people to sit in different seats. But ultimately, we've got to press the button that allows us to launch. So the idea behind this is that once I launch a service, that's important, but it's not the end. Just because I launched the rocket in the air, I've got to get those astronauts back to the ground after they're in space. Launching a service through service transition is about taking something that I intend to make successful, putting it into production, and having the necessary processes to care for that service as it gets deployed and to understand what I deployed once it got there. If I'm mission control, I'm interested in making sure when that rocket takes off that the right boosters fire and I'm not shooting another rocket off at the exact same time that's going to collide with it. I want to make sure that once it gets there, I know how many astronauts I had on board, I know what my cargo was, and I know what it costs to get there. In the same way, if I'm delivering something for a business like a customer ordering application, I want to know that when I deliver and implement that customer ordering application, and I message to my customers that it's going to be available to them, and I pump my sales guys up that they're going to have access to this, that people can order things through our business, that when they push this into production, that I'm going to have the necessary processes not to collide with something else that's happening. Like, let's say I go to deploy my customer ordering application and I forget that I need to have the bits ready to be deployed. Or I find out that the web servers they're deploying them to are being patched that weekend at the exact same time. That's going to present a pretty significant problem to the success of my deployment. And what if I do the deployment and I don't remember that I need to have 4 web servers instead of 2? And my capacity isn't met. Or when I deploy it, I didn't buy the necessary assets onto which to deploy it. This allows for me to be able to ensure that when I deploy it, I have a structured way of doing it. Oftentimes, deploying new services or even updates to services are done in a very unstructured way in businesses. It's like launching the rocket and not having any planning around how you're going to get it back or how it's even going to get into the air, and then maybe even launching 2 at the exact same time. In our service transition process, we're really interested in this idea of classifying and ensuring that we understand what we're doing. This fits for both new services and updates to existing services. So for example, if you're deploying a service pack to a new app, to one of your existing applications or to a packaged application, what have you done to ensure that that's going to be successful? Or are you just kind of crossing your fingers and hoping that when you do the deployment, it's going to be successful? Service transition is about managing that deployment and also managing risk so that way when you do the deployment, you're meeting your service level agreements that you've defined for that business service with your customers. So it allows for you to be able to have a much more structured way to be successful. Oftentimes I'll have meetings with customers and they'll say, you know, I have this really critical application and we haven't achieved the level of availability from this application that we'd like to see. So a good percentage of the time, I'd say 75%+ of the time, when we look at why they're having availability problems with that application, it isn't that the application was built poorly or that it's sitting on an old piece of hardware or that it's running in a virtual or a physical environment. It's because they aren't operating good change controls and good service transition practices in their production environment. People are deploying changes whenever they feel like it because a customer asked for it. So a customer comes to the sales guy and says, I really need this new capability. And it's important that I have this capability because it's going to make me 10% more efficient using your application. I'm going to buy more stuff. Well, people forget that that 10% that's going to make them more efficient buying more stuff still requires the application to function in the first place. So if I'm deploying something that's going to make the system better, but I take the system down for a substantial amount of time because I didn't do good planning, it's going to seriously hurt my application's reputation. It's going to hurt IT's reputation, and it's not going to make for a good future of my app. So when we're talking about service transition, this is one of the most important things you can do in IT. If you can do service transition right, you can do a lot of other things good. If you can do this right, you can do other things good. You can have a non-highly available application paired with great service transition, and you'll have a much more positive customer result than if you had a highly available architecture with poor service transition. All right, so what do we do to launch a service? What are the elements of this service transition we're talking about? Well, first, we start with transition itself. What are we going to launch? That's coming from our previous session called Service Design Package. So in the previous session, we sat down and said, what is it that we want to deliver to the business? And what are the components that make up that thing we're delivering to the business? What are we ultimately launching? Let's say it's a customer ordering application. Then we have change. How do we introduce it to the business? So in a lot of businesses, you have several different manners of introducing new applications or modifications to applications into the business that are based upon the level of risk. So for example, you might have a major change, a normal change type, an emergency change type, and a standard change type. These different change types are organized to allow us to be able to be flexible with how we're deploying new services or modified services, but also controlled. So it allows for us to be able to make sure that we're minimizing risk tied to our important applications, but also in the case of a standard change, we're allowing low risk changes to be deployed whenever the person needs to deploy them, because we know they won't negatively impact the application that we're delivering to our customers. So later on, we're going to talk in detail about change management and the different ways in which we can organize change management to be successful. We also need to do effective configuration management. So when we launch a service into production, one of the things I most often find is that people have things running in production, but they really don't know anything about it. They know I'm running a customer ordering application, but I really don't know what servers it runs on. I don't know its databases. I don't know the application pools it uses, the service accounts it uses. I might have a little bit of documentation that I got from my vendor, but that's about it. So we want to do a much better job of that. We want to be able to really understand what we're delivering to our business. So when we're talking about change management and we're talking about changing a particular server, we know that's going to impact our particular application. We also have to be considering asset management. Asset management and configuration management are very close disciplines, but they're ultimately somewhat different elements. A configuration and an asset allow for us to have two separate conversations. Configuration is that thing that I'm running in the business. The asset is that physical entitlement that I have, like a physical server, a software entitlement, a license entitlement from an outsourced vendor, a service entitlement, an OLA, these things that I'm getting that I'm entitled to on which things run. So an example would be something like, I've got a physical workstation. My physical workstation was bought and then arrived at our company. That physical workstation had an asset ID before I had a Windows operating system running on it. That Windows operating system has a name. So I've got NLWAA, my workstation operating system, running on my physical workstation hardware. Let's say I decide that I want to reimage my workstation. I've got NLWAB. In that case, I've got two configuration items running on one asset. That asset existed at a previous point of time and lives for perhaps 3 years. And during that life cycle, it might have two, three, four Windows operating systems that have run on it in that time frame. So as you can see, there's sort of a relationship between the configuration and the asset, but they're ultimately somewhat different things. So that's something we have to consider when we're talking about our launch. We also have to talk about release. Release management is about taking changes and organizing them appropriately for deployment. So for example, some companies have a weekly release process. Every weekend, they release new versions of their public application. So like, let's say I've got this custom ordering application, and every weekend my developers are pushing out a new version of that application. It's got new features that I'm delivering. So what release management does is it says, okay, I've got change one, change two, and change three. We need to structure those changes together to be deployed to the public presence after they've gone through testing as a group. So release management allows for us to be able to be very structured in how we deliver our changes together. Ultimately, it's difficult to do release management unless you already do change management. So it's something to keep in mind. All right. So all these processes are really important. What tools support these processes? We have System Center Service Manager. It provides for all the processes in the service transition phase. So when you're talking about change management and you're talking about configuration and assets, all these different processes exist in Service Manager to be able to be operated on. We also have Operations Manager to provide us with monitoring of our deployment at launch. And we also have our release processes, which can use the engineering capabilities that are available in things like Orchestrator and SCCM and Virtual Machine Manager. These tool sets facilitate structured deployment. So the reason I say that is because usually if I'm doing deployments, like deployments of my customer ordering application every weekend, I'm better off using an automated way to deploy those deployments, those releases, than I am doing it manually, because I eliminate this sort of guesswork that comes along with an individual or the opportunity for error. And I structure it in a way which is a known quantity every time. It also makes it very easy to test, because I can use that same process to test against the lab environment over and over and over with a variety of different variables to make sure that it works properly. So I usually prefer, if I can, if I'm going to do something more than once, I usually prefer to be able to build an automation around that deployment rather than do it manually. What you'll find is that if you can automate, you don't need to have as much skill. So you need to have as much skill quantity. You might have the same number of people you've always had, but those same number of people are able to get more done. It allows for me to be able to scale very quickly, because I can always take more Virtual Machine Manager or more Orchestrator servers and add them and have them do more automations at once. It's harder for me to train another engineer to do the same task the same way I've always done it. So if I want to make sure it's done the right way every time, the best opportunity for me to do that is to be able to automate it. So now what we're going to do is we're going to demo some of these capabilities. Okay, so I'm inside of Microsoft System Center Service Manager, and I'm inside my IT business service list. My IT business service list has a business service called Customer Ordering Services that we completed the last time when we were talking about service design. So when we talked about service design, we articulated this idea of a customer ordering service that we're delivering to our end users that's served by this gentleman, Matt Sims, and some of the customers that are contributing to it, as well as my sales folks who are using the application, as well as its criticality to the business, which is a critical business application. And now what we want to do is we want to push this into production. So here's a couple elements that are going to be really important. The first element is, where is it going? So when I look at my customer ordering services, beyond simply having information about what it is, I also now have information about what it is that I'm deploying to. So I can see that my customer ordering services is something called Synthi Wallet. Synthi Wallet contains a couple key elements. It contains a web server called Synthi Wallet that's underneath my website components group. It contains a database components group called Synthi Wallet. That's the SQL database in which my application lives. And then also I have my individual web servers, of which you can see there's two of them, make it highly available. So this allows for me to understand the configuration of my application when it does get deployed into production, and to where I'm deploying those changes. That's really important, because if I had two different updates that are impacting the server Synthi W02, maybe I'm doing patching to Synthi W02 and trying to deploy a application build for Synthi Wallet to Synthi W02, that would have a negative impact on my success. I can also see the change requests that are related to this. So if I were to go to related work items, here's the change request that's tied to this particular customer ordering application. So when I look at this particular application, I can then judge it based upon its state. I can judge it based upon its availability schedule, its components, and then the things that are related to it, like the change request that's impacting it. So then if I were to say, okay, now I've defined this thing that I'm delivering to the business. I've defined what it is. I've defined its configuration. Now I actually want to push it out. So if I were to open up this particular change request, it's going to open up my deploy customer ordering application change request. And inside of here, I have a description. I have a software area and a priority that are tied to it. My risk is a medium risk, but it's a major change. I have planning articulated, so I can see my deployment date is Tuesday, October 1st at 10 p.m. and then the scheduled end date is October 1st at 11 p.m. I can see the activities that go into that change. So those activities allow me to flow it through the appropriate cycles. So I can see that I have initial screening, primary owner validation, the cab review, which is the actual approval of the cab itself, the deployment steps, so I can see in my change deployment, I've articulated my database update activity and my web code deployment, and then I have a post-implementation review. This is aggregated to the overall status of this particular change. So if I were to take out of this change and go into a different area of Service Manager called Work Item Management, I can show a slightly different perspective on how to see these. So for example, that was showing one individual change. What if I'm now interested in all the changes that are happening? So I can see, for example, when I look at work item management, I have work items, change management, major changes, which is a category of change, and then the steps that my changes flow through. So I can see they go through initialization, primary owner approval, which is essentially the owner of the service. So if I say my service has an owner on it. Let's go to my service map here. General, there's my owner. So I'll say that he's going to be actually approving my change before it gets deployed. I have the cab approval. I have the actual deployment itself and then post-implementation review. I can see I have six changes in the major changes for in initialization phase. I also have some other changes that are going to be in primary owner approval or cab approval phases. I can see their particular dates and their times, and I can look for conflicts, and I can understand whether or not I have too much happening on that particular night, that particular time frame. I can also take this schedule, and I can bubble it up into SharePoint. So oftentimes I take the change schedule, and I push it up into a SharePoint view that says, even if you're not in my tool set, even if you're not in the console, I want you to be able to view my schedule in various ways. So maybe a calendar view or a Gantt view. I want to subscribe to it from my Outlook client, so I can take these changes and I can push these out into a view that allows for them to be able to see what's going on at any given moment, categorized by different services that I'm serving. So then when I look at these individual changes, it allows me then to be very structured in how I'm managing them and working with them. So I can see, for example, here's a different change request for a standard change. Standard changes are much more simple. They don't have as many activities because they're lower risk. So these processes facilitate me managing these different types of deployments in the way that's appropriate for them. I can't use one process for every single change deployment because ultimately it's going to stop a lot of my innovation. Sometimes companies try to implement one process for everything. They find they're using major change processes for the simplest report change that has no negative impact. So you have to use an appropriate change process for the right kind of change. We also tie this to release management. So release management facilitates taking my release process and then bucketing many of them. So for example, I can see that I have a regular weekend website release. My regular weekend website release articulates the schedule for that release that reoccurs every weekend that multiple changes could get tied to. It relates whether or not there's downtime during that period, so it allows me to pre-plan downtime, which can then tell my alerting system, like operations manager, not to alert me regarding certain types of modifications. It also allows for me to articulate the activities within the release process and the related change requests. So I can see, for example, that this release contains the change request of deploy customer ordering application. So it allows for me to be able to build these release processes that I'm then attaching these changes to. So every weekend I can say, okay, I've got two changes for this release this weekend. I've got one change for this release this weekend, and so on. It allows me to be very structured in how I do that. It also allows me to automate against it. The last element I want to make sure I show is configuration management and asset management relationships. So in my business service, I already showed how that particular thing I delivered to the business contains a configuration. So if I go to my service map inside of customer ordering services, I can see these different configuration elements. And when I look at these configuration elements, it allows for me to be able to open them up and work with them and look at them and understand how they're used within the context of the app, as well as how they relate to other things. It also allows for me to be able to see those things inside the context of other configuration elements from a different type of perspective. So for example, if I wanted to see not just Cincy Wallet, but maybe all my SQL databases, this allows for me to be able to see all that information. So for example, if I'm a SQL admin and I want to see new SQL databases and existing SQL databases as they're pushed into production, this allows for me to see all of those things that I'm managing. So I may know now that I've got a new SQL database, Cincy Wallet, that's being pushed into production, but I've also got some other SQL databases that I have to manage over time too. And I can use this configuration then to be able to track these and say, here's my collation, here's this recovery model, here's when it was added, here's this log auto growth set. And I can organize these in different ways and manage them per my responsibility area. So if I'm an Active Directory admin and a DNS admin and I'm managing my DNS servers, this might be more interesting to me as a configuration item that's getting pushed into production. Maybe part of this rollout is to push out a new DNS server for a new site. So it allows for me to manage the things I deliver to the business, not just having a work item, but also tracking the actual configuration. Now, you should note, these configurations were not filled in manually. These configurations came through automated means using something like Operations Manager. Finally, we have asset management. Asset management, in many ways, is again about entitlements. So if we were to take an example of a hardware asset, the hardware asset of Cincy HV23 is a physical hardware asset. It's owned by Shannon Fritz. He's our server team lead. It's got a description. It's got a manufacturer, a model, a serial number, a hardware asset status, an asset type. It has a location, an organization, and then an associated configuration of the Windows operating system for Hyper-V that's running on it, as well as some contracts. So what this allows for me to do is define this thing. Now, this exists whether I have an operating system loaded on that hardware or not. This hardware could be sitting in a crate, and it's still an asset. That's the difference between a configuration item and an asset. The configuration item ultimately runs on the asset. It's a configuration of a operating system or a database or a thing. You could almost say that asset kind of is like a configuration item, but ultimately there's a little difference in how they're maintained and managed. So as we think about these different elements, we then can get performance characteristics from other tools. So when I push out into production, I can use other System Center components as well. So another System Center component would be something like Operations Manager. So Operations Manager is providing me with information that reconciles against some of the information I define in my service design package. So for example, one of the things I defined in my service design package was availability information. So for every application that I'm deploying into production, I can define an availability metric, and that availability metric can be managed and maintained and monitored. So I can say, for example, I happen to run an Exchange 2010 server. So my Exchange 2010 environment is being managed for its availability. So then I can say my customer expectations are 99.9. I can see that in my environment over the last 30 days, I've accomplished 100% availability of that particular application. So it allows for me to know that I'm achieving the results that I've promised to the business. And those service level objectives can be created based upon a monitor that then measures against real life experiences of the app. So it can say, I don't just care if the server's on or not. Like that's not actually telling me if the application is responsive and functional. I can monitor against synthetic transactions. So I can say, send an email through the system and manage and understand whether or not that email is getting to its destination, or browse out to the site of Outlook Web Access and determine whether or not that application is available. or use a product like GSM to be able to manage and monitor that application from afar. So for example, Microsoft offers a GSM that allows for me through Azure to be able to have multiple monitoring points around the world and track whether or not my application is available or not. So I can see, for example, I'm tracking this Auction Center application, and I can see its transaction time that's managed and monitored through Global Service Monitor. I also, when I'm considering tool sets, in addition to just monitoring and understanding the health of something I'm deploying to the business after I've deployed it, like saying, after I've launched my rocket into space, I want to make sure that the craft is still functioning properly through mission control, I also probably want to perform some automated operations. So when I'm performing my release, what is it that I want to automate in my release process? So for example, that's an example where we could use Orchestrator. So System Center Orchestrator can deploy that application and manage the change process and the release process through its automation technology. It can do that through one of two main mechanisms. It can do it through the traditional Runbook Designer surface, or it can do it through the new SMA capabilities that exist in Orchestrator R2 in Windows Azure Pack. So when I look at this, right now I'm seeing release management, web server. So this is my release management process for web server code deployment. This allows for me to take that customer ordering application that I've organized the name for, have individuals responsible for, know the configuration, know the availability goal, are monitoring the availability goal, and instead of pushing out updates to it or new versions of it manually, I'm going to push out versions of it in an automated fashion. So I'm going to take that configuration information, I'm going to understand the business service relationship, I'm going to get the software, and then what I'm going to do is I'm going to determine the deployment path. Either it's going to my customer environment or my external website. And then when I deploy to my external website, I'm going to start the maintenance mode on the application. So it basically says, during the deployment process through my automated mechanism, I'm actually going to turn off monitoring on Ops Manager to say, I don't want alerts when I take the service down to deploy this new version because I know I'm already making that change. I'm going to deploy the code to deployment, get the code for deployment. I'm going to deploy to half the servers and test it. Then I'm going to deploy to the second half to servers. Then I'll stop maintenance mode. So it facilitates a structured release of that application into production on a regular reoccurring basis that isn't requiring manual activities. And this can follow any kind of scripting that you want to do. So worked with a lot of companies that their deployment process requires some scripting or even is done partially through something like Virtual Machine Manager, which is deploying structured applications. But it's doing it in a way that once you've deployed once, twice, three times, that automated path is so much more successful because it's done the same way every single time. Also, those changes that go into that release process, the changes that go into this automated release process can be structured in Orchestrator as well. So you can see, for example, in Orchestrator, I have a section called Change Management. I have my major change process, and my major change process contains work management activities. So I can see, for example, that when my change request is going from initiate to approval, I'm going through a process of updating those activities and then either sending a failure for a particular content validation, which is right here, or I'm sending a success email regarding that particular content. So it allows for me to be able to organize the things I'm delivering to the business in a very structured way, and in a way that allows for me to be able to control the paths that they go down and even what are the failure conditions that these applications go through. All right, so now that we've shown some of these capabilities inside of System Center Service Manager, Orchestrator, Operations Manager, and some of its interaction with things like Virtual Machine Manager, what do we do next? Well, the first thing I would ask is, do you have a process for launching a service into production? What does that process of launching into production look like? And how structured are you? How repeatable are you for deploying into production? Or in your business, is it done very sort of randomly, or is it done without a lot of structure? And you see that you're seeing negative results as a result of deploying without structure. How do we improve the way that we're deploying? Also, do you know what you launched? So once you've gone through a production deployment process, do you know what you pushed into production based upon configuration management or even a basic spreadsheet? Or is it something where you're just kind of trusting the developers to know what it was that was deployed? Also, do you have a method for looking at things that are deployed into production on a given day or a given weekend, ensuring that you don't have conflicts? Or are you just kind of hoping for individuals to talk? So when we're talking about these practical elements, you'll see that when you set up a structured mechanism for managing the movement of a service from design to production, or the updating of an existing production service with a service pack or an update or a new code revision, it allows for us to be able to do it in a way which minimizes risk and maximizes the value that's delivered to the customers. So next time, we're going to start digging into change management specifically. We're going to talk about different change types, ways in which we can organize change management, and how we'll use Microsoft tools to be able to enable it. We'll also talk about how do we protect existing service integrity, how do I improve availability of my services, and how do I launch new services into production using change management disciplines.